What about tithing? Disc 2, Tithing in the Apostolic Era. There's a lot of confusion about tithing among believers today. Are we required to tithe? Does the Torah obligate us to give 10% of our incomes? In the previous CD, we learned that the Torah's laws of tithing are a lot more complicated than just giving 10%. But we also learned that they mostly pertain to people living in the land of Israel and doing agriculture in the land of Israel during the days of the temple. Now that we have laid the Torah foundation for the commandment of tithing, we can now turn our attention to the apostolic writings. In this teaching, we will examine the subject of tithing from various passages that are found in the Gospels and Epistles. It is in the apostolic writings that we see the outworkings of the commandments as they were given in the Torah. Therefore, it is imperative, when considering our own personal practice, that we see how Yeshua and the apostles carried out these commandments and what importance they placed on them. We will see that these tithing commandments are referenced both in a practical sense as well as in metaphorical usage. First, let's take a look at the famous story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. I'm sure you're all familiar with the scene. The tax collector is in the temple praying and beating his breast as he begs for mercy from God. The Pharisee, on the other hand, is looking at the tax collector with disdain and boasting of all of his deeds before Hashem. In Luke 18:11, he prays, "God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get." John Lightfoot points out that the Pharisee's declaration, "I give tithes on all that I get," is very similar to the declaration described by the Torah in Deuteronomy for a person offering up the second tithe in the third and sixth year. Deuteronomy 26:13 proscribes the recitation of, "I have removed the sacred portions out of my house, and moreover, I have given it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow." Notice that the Pharisee speaks of tithing on all that I get. Here we find evidence that already by the Second Temple period, some groups were giving tithes not just on agricultural product, but on all forms of income. This practice is also reflected in the Book of Jubilees, the Dead Sea Scrolls, as well as in the early Jewish Christian document of the Didache. We'll talk more about the Didache towards the end of this lesson. Whether tithing on everything was considered going above and beyond the letter of the law, or as following the Torah itself, is a matter of debate. We have already learned that the Torah does not explicitly command tithing on all our possessions, but we also learned that there is a principle of tithing 10% on everything established in Genesis with Abraham and Jacob. An early Midrash even finds support for tithing beyond agriculture through a creative exegesis of the text. Midrash Sifrei quotes Deuteronomy 14:22. "You shall definitely tithe all your agricultural produce, which comes forth in the field every year." It then comments, "From this we could deduce that only agricultural produce must be tithed. How can we deduce that it applies to loan interest, trading, and all other profits? From the word all. For the verse could have stated, your agricultural produce. What is the significance of all? To include loan interest, trading, and all other profits." Therefore, it is possible that the Pharisee considered tithing of everything to be a fulfillment of the Torah's commands and not just going above and beyond the letter of the law. In Matthew 23, the Master himself addresses some of the tithing practices of the Pharisees. In Matthew 23, verse 23, we read, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." We find an echo of this teaching in Luke 11:42. "But woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb and neglect justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." In this passage, Yeshua is criticizing the Pharisees for being so scrupulous about their tithing practices, yet at the same time neglecting the weightier matters of the law. As we mentioned in the last teaching, the laws of tithing crops only applied to the seven species of Israel found in Deuteronomy 8:8: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. Garden herbs such as dill, mint, and cumin would have been outside of this requirement, and therefore tithing on them would have been considered above and beyond the letter of the commandment. Yet, we see that Yeshua does not outrightly dismiss this scrupulous practice. In fact, he almost commends it. He concludes by saying, "These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." His beef with their practice was that for this group of Pharisees, tithing mint, dill, and cumin was done at the expense of the much weightier principles of Torah that involved loving one's neighbor. Another one of the major issues that arose in the days of the apostles from the tithing commandments was what should you do if you are unsure about whether or not the food you were eating had been tithed? Remember that according to rabbinic exegesis of the Torah, not only was tithing required, but it was also forbidden to eat from food which had not been tithed. This food was then considered by some as holy and not fit for consumption by the average person who wasn't in a state of ritual purity. When food such as bread was thought to have been produced from grains which had not been tithed, it was referred to as demai and was considered consecrated and forbidden to be used as ordinary food. While almost every farmer would have removed the truma gedulah, large heave offering, some would not remove the first and second tithes in an effort to get more profit from the harvest. After studying the vast amounts of agricultural regulations on the Israelite farmer, we can now understand why some might have resorted to this practice. So, in the case of demai, doubtfully tithed produce, very pious Jews would remove 1/100th of the food and discard it so that no one could eat it, just as an additional precaution. New Testament and rabbinic scholar David Instone Brewer has proposed that this is the situation going on in the stories of the feeding of the 4,000 and 5,000 in the Gospels. In the Matthew 14:20 account of the feeding of the 5,000, we read right at the end of the story, "And they ate and were satisfied, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces left over." Almost identical language is found in Matthew 15:37 in the account of the feeding of the 4,000. "And they ate and were satisfied, and they took up 7 baskets full of the broken pieces left over." These same details are also given in the parallel accounts of Mark, Luke, and John. Instone Brewer believes that the reason there are leftovers is because the people considered the food as demai, that is, doubtfully tithed, and separated a portion to either be given to a priest or destroyed so that no one could eat it. Therefore, this very well could be an example of the disciples of Yeshua being extra scrupulous about the mitzvah of tithing.